What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How are you doing, everybody? It's my pleasure to be here with you. This is the 100th episode of Macroaggressions. It's pretty cool. I'm a bit, I'm humbled, frankly, to be doing this and to have an audience that's listening to it. It's an honor. I'm thrilled. I couldn't do it without your support, of course. Couldn't do it without the support of the sponsors. My Patriot Supply has been phenomenal to us. They've created their own website, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, for you to go shop through there and save yourself some money. I highly recommend doing it. Let's get ourselves prepared for the insanity, right? I mean, we have to face it. You might as well, if you're going to listen to shows like this, you might as well at least take the additional step of being prepared so that when your spouse says, why are you listening to all that crazy stuff? You can say, well, listen, if it wasn't for me listening to this crazy stuff, we wouldn't be eating this delicious meal from My Patriot Supply. And if you act now, and if you go through our website, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, you can save $100 on a 4-week supply. Plus, they have free shipping on orders over $99 inside the United States. So, look, use this as a little bit of time before the storm. Get yourself prepared. Start thinking about things like that, because 2021 could very well turn out to be a much worse version of 2020. I hope that's not the case. But hey, worst case scenario, you wind up with a bunch of this prepared food in advance. Well, you eat it. You go camping and eat all the food on the camping trip. I don't know. We've got options there. But look, my point is this. 2020 was rough. 2021, it does not show any signs of lightening up. I mean, I hope it does. Maybe shows like this will help to get you through it. I hope so. I look back on this year and I'm proud of what we've done. You know, I feel like we've tackled a lot of topics. But there's so much more. There's so much more to do. There's so much more to talk about. There's so much more to consider. There's so many more interesting people to have on the show. So one of the things I want to do in this episode, I'm going to look back on a lot of the topics that we covered, a lot of the people that we had on. And then maybe after I'm done talking about it in this episode, it might spark something in you to go back and say, oh yeah, I remember that interview with Jason Bassler from Policing the Police or Free Thought Project. I should go back and listen to that. Yeah, he's an interesting dude. Or you might, somebody might, you know, pop up on your radar now and you realize, oh yeah, that's a guy that was on Macroaggressions. I should go back and listen to that. So I want to thank all the guests that have come on in the first 100 episodes. The way we do the format is half the shows are monologues like this one, half the shows are interviews with other people. It's great to get to know these guys. Some of them I've known for a while. Some of them I'm new to, it's been a treat for me. So, I'm going to go alphabetically here just talk a little bit about them and about their episode. Alika Spawn Naihe, he's the guy that created my logo for me, and he's a friend of the show. And he's a great dude. He's from Hawaii. His family, he can trace his family's history in Hawaii back, like, I want to say he said like 400 or 500 years or something like that. It's insane. I mean, he had this he came on and gave us this deep explanation of the history of Hawaii. And it was fascinating to me. And it came out of a conversation that I was just having with him. That wasn't being recorded or anything. We were just chatting, and I was asking him about Hawaii, and I think he got like halfway through one of the first questions I asked him, and I just said, save it. I want to record this. This is so good. Cause it was all of these topics and, stories of people trying to infiltrate Hawaii, you know, different countries over the years, and how they were able to work with some of them, how they were able to defend themselves against others. It was just fascinating, a fascinating look at that. And I love that. And I love how, you know, now I have to think of this show like a producer, like a show producer thinks about it. You know, so when I'm having a conversation with Alika and he's talking about all these concepts from Hawaii that I had never even pondered, I catch myself going, ooh, this would be great for the show. You know, because I feel like it's pretty simple. If I think it's interesting, there's a chance other people might think it's interesting too, which is the reason why you're listening to this. I mean, at our core, We just want to, you know, we want to gather critical information. We want to talk to interesting people, good people, and we want to hear what they have to say. We want to incorporate it and see if it works, if it fits with the way we see the world. Great. If it doesn't, that's okay too. Maybe we'll take something from them, something they said or something that they do that made us go, oh, I like that. I connect with that. Or the contrary is, you know, I'm not feeling that, or whatever that person's saying, I just don't connect with that. I don't think that's the right way. Look, we're all trying to figure this out. We're in a very complicated world that's made exponentially more difficult because of our culture, our language, you know, mental instability. We're dealing with people on a day-to-day basis, and you make the assumption that you're dealing with a sane, rational human being, but you don't know what that person's situation is or what they're dealing with. So I feel like, you know, we're all collectively kind of like, I'm obviously, it's my show, so I'm sort of like leading it, but I feel like I'm listening to these interesting people that we have on because I just want to figure out how it all works. You know, I don't know that I will. I'm not holding out hope that I'll have it all figured out, but I'm looking for pieces to the puzzle. I'm looking for people that know where these pieces go and how they fit together. And maybe if we get enough of these pieces put together and this thing will take shape, we'll start to see what's happening. That's my plan, at least. So when I invite people like Benny Wills on, who's one of the founders of Joy Camp, we talk about the importance of language and what he's doing with Parisia. You know, this is Parisia. He's doing these really interesting workshops where they're focusing on language. He's a theater guy, you know, he's an actor, he's a presenter, he's the host of one of the years I was at Anarchapulco, he was the MC of the whole event. He's the MC of Red Pill Expo. I mean, he's the guy who's there. He understands how it all works, but he also has this actor slash presenter skill set that a lot of people don't have. And I just love Benny, you know, and we connected up, before the first time I went to an Acapulco. He had heard me on Higher Side Chats with Greg Carlwood, who I respect Greg Carlwood so much. He's doing such a great job. And Benny reached out to me through Greg saying, I heard your episode, and I connected with it. And I was so blown away because I'm a huge fan of Joy Camp, and he didn't know me and I didn't know him, but we were both geeking out on each other's work. It was phenomenal. So I mean, not to sound too much like The Bachelorette, but like, I love that, you know, I love that. I like that. So nice segue into Chrissy Mayer. Chrissy Mayer's hysterical. She's a stand-up comedian from New York who gets it. She understands why things are funny. Even if it's not actually funny, it's still allowed to make you laugh. The insanity of it all. Chrissy Mayer's been, she's been great to have on the Union of the Unwanted shows, which is our group podcast. I highly recommend people check out. It's a group show with me, Sam Tripoli from Tinfoil Hat, Ricky Verandis from the Ripple Effect podcast, and Midnight Mike from my favorite podcast, OBDM, which stands for Our Big Dumb Mouth. And the four of us have this group show. We invite all these interesting people on to try and, you know, solve a problem or explain to us, you know, hey, lay it out to us like we're a bunch of dummies here. Explain to us how this technology works. Explain to us how they have the ability to deplatform us. And, you know, so we get these experts on, people that see the world from a different way. And Chrissy Mayer's been on multiple times to explain that to us. I have a friendship with Corey Hughes. Corey Hughes has forgotten more about the JFK assassination than I'll ever know. I mean, he is a straight up savant when it comes to that. We've had, you know, and we've had to talk about how, you know, it's like JFK. I don't get into it too much here. Not because I don't think it's important. Quite the contrary. I find it to be really the intersection of government fuckery and conspiracy theory is this cross between JFK's assassination and JFK authorizing and promoting the beginning of the space program, which in the moon landing, you know? So when you talk about conspiracy theories, they talk about JFK and the moon landing. And I find it interesting that John F. Kennedy was obviously the focal point of that. He played a huge role, though he wasn't around to be there for the moon landings. I put that in quotes, whatever that means. That's another topic. But he, you know, at the death of JFK, and Corey Hughes will tell you, from that moment on, everything changed. The world is so different. Obviously, the world changes just in general over time. But the role of the United States, it got much darker after that. Incredibly dark. When you come to understand that the president of the United States can have his head blown off in broad daylight in front of a crowd of people, and the real story doesn't ever get leaked, you know, or the real people responsible for it are never held accountable. Think about what that does to society. Now, there's a huge segment of the population that still think Lee Harvey Oswald got off a lucky shot and hit Kennedy in the head. You know, I think those people don't want to believe, because if they invested, I don't know, 2 minutes, you know, they would realize that it was an impossibility. But that moment there changed history. And Corey Hughes understands it better than anyone. And I'm really grateful that he was on to explain that. I had Connecticut Freedom Alliance on. They were talking about the vaccine debate. It's a topic we've talked a lot about. It's very important. And to be clear, like I'm always clear about this, I'm not a doctor. I'm not. But that doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to know anything. It doesn't mean that I'm incapable of figuring things out. It doesn't mean that you're incapable of understanding the vaccine debate. Don't let anybody tell you that you have to be a doctor in order to have a valid opinion about that. Because I know plenty of doctors that went through medical school and their business cards say DR period on it, right? And they don't know jack shit about vaccines. I know far more than they know about vaccines. And that should really never happen, considering I'm not a doctor and they are. But here we are. Maybe I've just done more research. I've read more about it. I've talked to more people about it. And through these, you know, through Ricky Verandis, I was introduced to Brian Festa and Don Jolly at Connecticut Freedom Alliance and the work that they've been doing with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Del Bigtree and Brian Hooker from Vaxxed is amazing. And in both cases, the stories for Don and Brian Festa and Brian Hooker, for that matter, from Vaxxed, have very personal ties to children that were damaged by vaccines. So when the average person say vaccines are safe, vaccines don't cause autism, my response to them is vaccines don't cause autism in every child every single time. That is correct. But it is incorrect to say that vaccines do not ever cause autism. It's just incorrect. And I'll tell you what, if you would like to debate someone on that, don't debate me on it. I'll bring in some of the mothers that I know that took their children into the pediatrician for their wellness visit to get their shots, and the children never spoke from that moment on. Lost eye contact, banged their heads against the wall forever. So you tell them it's all in their head, that they're imagining it, you know. We're well past that for macroaggressions. That's remedial stuff. If you're still debating whether or not vaccines may or may not play a role in this, you need to find a different show. We've already covered that. We're digging into the real stuff. You know, we're talking to, you know, to doctors. We're talking to people that have worked in big pharma. This is not in their heads. They're not imagining this. There's no upside to this, to their careers. It's a career killer. You watch the behavior of someone like Brian Festa, who is an attorney and has a vaccine damaged child, who makes it their mission. I ask you, would you make this your mission in life? If you were just guessing that maybe this caused this to your kid, maybe the vaccine had possibly something to do with your kid, would you then devote your life, potentially ruin your career, and make it your sole focus if you just kind of thought maybe sort of this had something to do with it? Of course not. These are people that have firsthand accounts of what these vaccines have done to members of their family. And when I get, you know, when Brian reaches out to me and says, can we come on the show and talk about this? Because we're having a big event and I would love for this to get out there as soon as possible to as many people as possible that are going to be in the Connecticut area. My response is, let's do this immediately. And the reason is, look, the vast majority of people that listen to this show are not in the Connecticut area. Connecticut is a state inside the United States. It's a small one. It's geographically next to New York City, close to Manhattan, but it's a small state. It's the principle, though. You know what I mean? We do that show and maybe two people hear it that are in the area and they contribute. I'm okay with that right now. I mean, as this show gets bigger, those, you know, in that demonstration, instead of two people, it might be 200 people, but whatever. We're going to make a difference on this. So I appreciate guys like Brian Festa coming on to talk about personal things about what happened with their children. And I respect him even more because even though it's too late for his own kid, he is devoting himself, and so is Dawn, They are devoting themselves to making sure that it doesn't happen in terms of damage to somebody else's kid, to other people that they don't even know, to children they'll never know. Think about that. That takes a tremendous amount of guts and devotion to do that. And speaking of someone with guts and devotion, David Icke was on the show. You know, David Icke is, he's an important person for me in this, you know, from my understanding of how this world works and what's possible and what is impossible and how we've been manipulated by governments and media. You know, he was an integral part of my awakening. He talks about a variety of topics, obviously, and he explains them in a way that I think makes sense. At least it makes sense to me. And I respect him a whole lot. I know he's taken heat for 30 years. You know, he's been ridiculed, and that's tough to deal with. You know, it's one thing to be, you know, to watch somebody get ridiculed and acknowledge and understand that it must feel bad. It's quite another thing when it actually happens to you, and to have the guts and say, I don't care. I don't care about that. I care about waking people up. I care about talking about the truth. If 99 people out of 100 want to make fun of me and call me the lizard guy, or you know, as David says, you know, cross the street when they saw me walking down the street so they could get to the other side and get away from me. You know, David, that takes a tremendous amount of intestinal fortitude. David Icke has got that. He also happens to be a very nice person. I've met him in Mexico. We were both speakers at Anarchapulco. We spoke there a little bit. We swapped books. We talked a little bit in the airport as well on the way out of town. I like him. I like David Icke a lot. I like his sons. Jamie Icke is running Iconic. Gareth Icke is involved as well. They're good guys, you know? And so this show has had a home on Iconic from the beginning, thanks to Jamie. And I appreciate that a whole lot. It means a lot to me because of how much I respect David Icke's work. And I must have a thing for the Brits, you know? I definitely have a thing for the Brits. I've been told I have a very British sense of humor, which I will take as a compliment, frankly. And I probably do have it. I watched a lot of Monty Python. I watched Fawlty Towers. You know, I watched all... I like all that stuff. And Dominic Frisby was on the show recently, and I just laugh even when I say his name. It's a fun name to say, let's be honest. Dominic Frisby, he got on my radar when we were both in Mexico in 2019, same Anarchapulco conference where I met David Icke, and I went and did my presentation, and then there was lunch, and then I think, I'm not sure who went next, Bix Weir, David Morgan, somebody. And Dominic Frisby went last. He was a fill-in for somebody that couldn't make it. And I don't know how you get a fill-in from the UK on last minute notice, but there he was. And he stole the show. He stole the show. It was so good. I remember thinking, I am just so glad I don't have to follow this guy. He's so funny. He's smart. He knows a ton about crypto. That's part of what he was talking about there. I just really enjoy him. I enjoy his sense of humor. If you haven't heard 17 Million Fuck Offs, it's a song he wrote that's out. He makes albums talking about this song was about Brexit. Those of you in the UK or in the EU in general, I think you could probably appreciate his song. But I love that I find a connection with guys like that. Like, he gets it. He understands that there's a lot of big problems going on in the world, but he's got a big smile on his face too, because he also understands it's all a bunch of bullshit, you know, and he has a pretty good way of expressing it. And I really connected with Dominic right away. I was glad he was able to come on the show. And another person who the first time I saw, I connected with their energy. Very different personality types. But Harry Vox. Harry Vox, I saw a presentation he did in 2014. And I was like, whoa, this guy is super intense. And in a good way, though, you know, and not in like a abrasive or creepy way or anything like that. He's just intense about the things that demand intensity. You know, I mean, it's hard to describe it. He's got an energy I connect with. His frustration I get, you know, and the way he goes about it, he's very thoughtful. And I've had a chance to get to, you know, to talk to Harry, and I really appreciate his style, and I hope to have him back on the show another time, because he's a wealth of information. And what's funny is that the way I came to find him was through his friend, who is also on the show, and in fact was the guest right before him, Helen Byniski. She's a writer for RT. They're both based in New York City. They both have this similar sort of like edge to them that I really connect with and appreciate. You know, they get it in a way that I really like. And Helen is she's a fabulous writer. I think if you're looking, you know, mainstream news is garbage, but from time to time you can find some outlets that have some good stuff. I like RT. It stands for Russia Today, and in the United States, anything Russia related will get you, you know, deplatformed or depersoned or whatever. But take that out of the equation. Listen, it's all state run media. Let's be honest here. I just think that RT's approach to it is way more objective than the others. It's not to say that it's fully objective, because after all, you put money in, you know, you may have a say in things, but I do like the way they come at it. And Helen is, her articles are always topical. They always make a whole lot of sense. She has a great way of summing up people's frustration and pointing it out in articles that get right into it, right to the heart of it. And she's got a bit of a bite to her, which I really like. You know, she's not afraid to go after the people that need a little going after, if you know what I mean. So, she's phenomenal. One of the things that I consider, that I like in, when I set out to do this show, Macroaggressions, I mean, listen, I've written a book, The Octopus of Global Control. I've now gone on to write a second book, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. I have a pretty good idea about a wide variety of topics. I don't know it all, though. I mean, I think that should go without saying, but one of the components where I really don't know it all is the, esoteric occult components to things, the references to biblical terms or where certain themes that have come through, you know, come from the Bible and have been incorporated in Hollywood movies and things like that. That is not my area of expertise. However, I really enjoy it. I find it to be fascinating. So when I get a chance, I like to have people that can come on and explain it to me, because it's not something that I understand. So having Isaac Weishaupt come on and talk to me about how, talk to me about Hollywood, not just the idea of the movie making Hollywood, but the concept behind Hollywood, where that terminology Hollywood comes from, where, you know, the spells that they're casting and how they go about doing it. It's just amazing to me. If people are interested in that, go back and find the episode I did with Isaac Weishaupt, because I got a lot of emails from people about that felt the same way. They said, that is really fascinating. I have to agree. Jason Bassler has been on the show. My man is doing it. He is the founder of the Free Thought Project. He is the co-founder of Policing the Police, with Matt Agarist, who's also a writer, does great work. Jason is very calm and very logical and very accurate, as he is figuratively just destroying the official narrative from the police force for a few bad apples. We're just doing what we were trained, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's heard it all. He's been deplatformed off of Facebook more than any person that I know, Jason Bassler has, in his projects. They always kick them off. And it makes you wonder, why is that? Why does Facebook want to get rid of the Free Thought Project and policing the police? Maybe because they don't want you to have a free thought, and maybe because they don't want you to police the police. I don't know, just a guess. When you're on like policing the police version 5 and Free Thought Project version 6 on Facebook, there's a reason why you've had to keep upping the moving to a new version, because they kick you off. And Jason Bassler, if you haven't figured it out yet, he's not going anywhere. He's coming back. He is a relentless dude. And you know what? I love that. I like that. Oh, Jeff Berwick's next on the list. And Jeff, though my co-author on The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, he's not a huge fan of doing interviews. I felt like I had to trick him into it. It's not totally true. He willingly did it, but I was like, come on, just come on in. Let's talk about the book and everything. So I said, you can bring wine if you'd like. He's like, oh, okay, well, maybe. So, but Jeff's my man, you know, and he's it's so valuable to have somebody like Jeff Berwick that you can bounce ideas off of, somebody that sees the world from an angle that is just so difficult to see it from, you know. And he has just a different take on it. He's got there's a lightness about him too, though he takes these sorts of things seriously. I don't know if it's that he's from Canada originally, but he's got this sort of like, oh, well, let's just see what happens kind of mentality, you know. And I expect, you know, here I am expecting like one response and you get a total other response. As an example of that, when our book first went out on Amazon, like within a day or two, there was a pirated version that was called Summary of the Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. And it was like a generic looking cover. And it was like a Cliff Notes version of our book after one day. I don't know. There must be some sort of like operation out there that does that. And so I sent that link over to Jeff and I was like, what do you want to do about it? And he just sent a response back. It was just him laughing. He just laughs like, I don't want to do anything about it. Who cares? And I was like, you know what? You're right. Who cares? These people have taken the book and they've written a summary and they're doing this and that. And I was like, yeah, right. Why did I even ask? Who fucking cares what they're doing? You know, like I was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to like be like, oh, they're infringing on our copyright. No, that's not the way he looks at things. And it shouldn't have been the way I looked at it either. But it was kind of a nice little wake up call. So Jeff's been on the show. Our good friend Jeffrey Wilson from the Conspiracy Farm has been on as well. I just think Jeffrey Wilson's the best. I mean, you probably can tell every time he's been on the Union of the Unwanted a bunch. You know, once again, somebody that approaches these topics from an aspect where he cares a lot about it, but is still able to see the insanity and kind of have a good laugh at it too. You know, it's not to say that he's not trying to be dismissive of it. He's just like, well, you know, there's some crazy people doing crazy things out there. And he's also a very positive person, a very positive influence. I like that a whole lot because we need some positivity, because look, these topics are difficult. Some of the people in this alternative media space are doom and gloom, and you know, and though not wrong, you know, you can't really accuse them of being all that wrong about predicting doom and gloom. I mean, there might be better ways to do it. I've always liked Jeffrey Wilson's approach to it, and someone else's approach who I dig a whole lot is Jimmy Jean. And I've known Jimmy for a couple years now. He's this grizzled, He's a grizzled hippie, man. He's been there. He has done it. He knows the game. He's been watching the game play out for a long, long time, and he can identify it and explain it to people in a way that makes a whole lot of sense. It's that like sitting around the campfire sort of education that you can only get from people that have been around and seen it and done it for a while, you know. And Jimmy Jean brings a perspective that I find to be extremely valuable. And he works in the technology field, has for a long, long time. So he knows the technical side of it in a way that I can't know. I have no interest in knowing it on that end. So Jimmy Jean will be making return appearances. I think that he's a super valuable member of this little community that we're building together. And the number one episode that I got so much positive feedback from, of all the interviews I did, and he's not the biggest, you'd think it would be David Icke, because David Icke has the biggest name. The number one episode I got positive feedback from was John Brisson. He talked about the Council for National Policy, which is like a think tank for the right, as opposed to like Council for Foreign Relations, which is kind of like a think tank on the left. I know it's not not totally left, but it's the CNP kind of is on the right, what the CFR is on the left. And so I didn't really know much about this Council for National Policy. At least I knew very little, but John came in and he can fill in the details in a way that is real valuable. He knows it inside and out. He's objective about it, and he's been doing it for a very long time. John Brisson will be back more and more on the show because I guess I sort of do take requests. I never really thought of it as like take requests, but I'm going to take the requests of everyone that said, please have John Brisson back on the show because he was outstanding. I agree. He was outstanding. And I've met some of these people, some of the guests, at least here in the first 100 episodes. I met out of Narcapulco. I've mentioned it a couple times just during this episode. And Johnny Dollar was one of them. And he and I tell a story of how we met during our DMT ceremony. And I'm not going to tell it here because it's a good enough story that you got to go back and listen to it because we got sort of set up on a blind date, a blind hallucinogenic date, so to speak. I mean, not in that sense, but you know, you had to partner up. You're all in the room. You're in this big room. Everyone's sitting in a circle with a bunch of strangers they don't know. Say, all right, we need everybody in groups of two. You turn to the person to your left and you go, how about you? And they go, okay, you're going to work. And that's how I met Johnny Dollar, who is, you know, this amazing, I had no idea. I was sitting next to this guy who was just this unbelievable post-pop surrealist artist, painter, who's doing all this work in the crypto community and is like, they have him in Miami to come in and talk about all his paintings, and he's in Mexico talking about, I mean, this is the guy I got randomly shacked up with is the dude that describes, I said, well, what does post-pop surrealism even mean? You know, it sounds like I'm thinking like Andy Warhol, you know, bullshit or something. He goes, well, in this one painting I do, it's basically Mickey Mouse holding this gas can. The gas can has the Bitcoin logo, and he's lit a central bank on fire behind him. He's standing there holding the gas can, and the central bank is on fire, burning to the ground. And I just go, you and I are going to be friends. That's just all there is to it. How can I not love that guy? So once again, it's just, I've been out in the world now for a little bit and started meeting some people, and good thing I kept in touch with them, you know, because I feel like they have the potential to play an interesting role in this show. So that's what I'm doing. I'm collecting fascinating people, I guess. Although I shouldn't say it like that, because now that I think about it, when asked to describe his relationship, Jeffrey Epstein described himself as a collector of people. So I should probably not say I'm collecting all these people for the show. But I guess I kind of am, you know what I mean? I'm meeting guys like Ken Ami, who has written maybe 20 books on, and I had him on just to talk about transhumanism in Hollywood. But, you know, and he filled in some of the gaps in that. But when you've written 20 books and I have you on for an hour, that's not enough time. Ken's going to be coming back. He can explain. So the thing that's fascinating about guys like Isaac Weishaupt or Ken Ami or Micah Dank, who was also on the show, is that they have this combination of knowledge in like the Bible and like astrotheology and symbolism, and they watch movies really differently than the way we watch movies, you know, or they watch the Super Bowl halftime show in a way that I can't watch. You know, I mean, like they see things and they go, well, what this symbolizes is, or what this means is, and some of it is, I'm sure some of it is speculation, but it sounds like most of their stuff is educated. Well, more than educated guesses. It's an understanding of the history of these symbols and what they mean to certain groups of people, and then explaining how that comes together, how Hollywood uses it, how they're casting. I mean, it's just all fascinating to me that Hollywood is casting these spells. And Ken is great. Ken asked me, you know, I had him on my show and he did it. He was gracious and we chat from time to time and he asked me to write a chapter for one of his books that he's writing. And so it was, he wanted me to break down an alien movie. And I broke down Contact. You know, that Jodie Foster, Matt McConaughey movie based on a Carl Sagan book. And what was funny about it was that how I started my chapter for it was that I did a book report on an alien movie. And I picked the one alien movie that doesn't ever show the alien in it. Doesn't show any aliens. It's not in Contact. So I had so much fun being able to do that and geek out. And Ken, you know, gave me the flexibility to kind of go with that wherever I wanted to. So shout out to him, you know, and the work he does. And these people that I'm mentioning, you know, these authors, and they have, their work is out there. You can support them. You can go buy it. You can look for Ken Ami, A-M-M-I is his last name, on Amazon. And I think like 20 books will pop up. I mean, he's prolific and real interesting topics. So, you know, when I see somebody that takes their work seriously like that, it makes me enthusiastic about it. And we've had Miriam Hanane on the show before. She's also been on my Union of the Unwanted show. Half a dozen times at least. She's the director of Vanishing of the Bees. She came on. She explained, talked to us a little bit about that, about the making of that movie. She's the owner of Honey Colony, who's a sponsor for the show. Use the promo code MACRO at honeycolony.com. I didn't mean to turn it into an ad, but I mean, if you're thinking about it, you know. So alternative media member, she's a writer. She writes for RT as well, among others, platforms. And I love to have this perspective on how she's, you know, and she's so creative too, as a director, as a writer, as an entrepreneur, you know, as just a journalist and a human being who speaks multiple languages and is right in. She always seems to be right in the middle of everything, all the good stuff that's happening. She's there, and I get messages from her saying, check this out, and what do you think of this? And I tell you, if I have the ability to get these people to have, you know, an association with this show, like as an example, through her Honey Colony company, and we as consumers of the show, but also consumers of goods, we then go out into the world and can make decisions on the things that we buy. And we realize from listening to these episodes that some of the companies that we, you know, some of the major corporations out there in the world are really evil. And we know this. Well, then I feel like a duty and obligation to bring in some of these small businesses and have connections with them to give us other options. You know, like, you know, you've got a birthday for your girlfriend or your wife or somebody, and you're, you know, and you run out of options and things to buy. God, I mean, I know I do. I went to Honey Colony and looked around and said, well, I'm going to go look for some girl stuff here, you know, that I can give out to, you know, for Christmas, for my mother-in-law and my mom and my wife. And I said, well, you know, if I'm going to buy this stuff anyway, I might as well support our show. I might as well support the people that we know, the companies, these small businesses. So that's why, and I have Chemical Free Body with Tim James, who's been on the show a couple of times. And I feel like, let's get these interesting people on. Let's talk about them. Let's get you, the listener, filled in on who they are. Oh, and then by the way, if they happen to also have a business, we can support that business too. You know, we should support that business as long as it's, you know, as long as it, if it's doing the, if their business is behaving in a way that parallels how they themselves as individuals are behaving, then we're probably on the right track. You know, and I know Tim James, he's a good guy. Marion's a really great lady. She's out there. She cares about truth. She cares about what's right. So what is she going to sell? She's going to sell products that feel that mimic that, you know, it's important for us. Midnight Mike has been on the show from OBDM. He's one of my partners on the Union of the Unwanted. He's just one of those guys that I just connect with, you know, I just do. I like his sense of humor. I like his disposition. I like the topics that they cover on OBDM. I like that he doesn't take it too seriously. I like that sometimes he gets frustrated with the insanity of it all, and it really gets to him, because it gets to me too. I connect to that. And so to have, you know, so listen, first of all, this show's a little on the serious side. You know, we talk about serious topics and I try to bring some levity to it. I do the best I can. I've got a dark sense of humor. I do laugh at the insanity of it all. But if you are not listening to OBDM's podcast and the sort of wacky shit that they talk about, it balances out the heaviness of it all. It's just so good. I can't explain it to you in a formula why I like it. I just like it. Okay. I just think it's funny. And there was a time, a couple of months ago when I got bombarded by like three people in a week that said to me, you should talk to Monica Perez. And you should talk to Monica Perez about the Boston bombing. And I was like, I know who Monica Perez is from Propaganda Report, but I don't know her. I don't know her, know her. I know who she is, but I don't know her. I'm going to take this as a sign. I'm going to take this as a sign that maybe I should reach out to her and talk to her about the Boston bombing. And I'm glad I did, because not only did she come on my show to fill in the gaps on that, she's been on the Union of the Unwanted a bunch of times. I've been on Propaganda Report to talk about things. We really like each other, and she brings on her partner, Brad Binkley. The two of them did a radio show in Atlanta for years and years. Now she's relocated to LA, but they still do the Propaganda Report. Get into the Propaganda Report. Get into it. It's so deep. It's so full of information. Look, I don't have a monopoly on this information. I'm giving you one aspect of it. I'm giving you my version of it. And guess what? I could be wrong about this stuff. I certainly, most certainly could be wrong about this stuff. I don't think that I am. I'm pretty sure I mean, I've got facts and I've got, you know, I'm looking at my controlled demolition book sitting next to me. And I know there's 254 footnotes in that book. So I know it's backed by a form of evidence. But could I get some components of this wrong? Absolutely. So I don't have a monopoly on information and quality. I encourage you to go out there and listen to other shows and get information from other people on similar topics. Let's put our heads together and figure this out, because where I may be lacking in one component, someone else may pick up the slack. And when I talk to Monica Perez at Propaganda Report, I feel like she's coming at the same topics from a slightly different angle, and I'm always really interested to hear how she sees it, because it's usually similar to me, but she's thought of something that I never would have thought of. And I catch myself going, oh, that's so good. That's Monica Perez. Monica Perez is the, oh, that's so good, you know, lady in my life, where she says something and I just go, I never would have thought of that. That's so right. And then I can't ever unthink it. You know what I mean? So I respect that about her. She brings a professionalism from years and years on the radio that I respect and obviously don't have. It's quite obvious. But I like that about her. I like her approach to it too, because on top of that professionalism, she left ample space to have fun doing it too. So I know that she enjoys it. And Richard Willett has been on this show. He's a very mild-mannered British gentleman who makes just outstanding documentary films. Don't let his mild-mannered personality fool you, because he's a straight up savage in his writings, in his movie making, and in his thoughts. Rich Willett and I are going to be working on something together in the future. That is a fact, and we can't discuss it at this point, but once it's all put together, we will. So that's a guy. When I think about explaining the information that I have in my warped little head, and I think about the way I had to put it together in my octopus book in order to have it make sense, the formatting of that. Rich Willett, I watch his films and I realize that what he is great at doing is taking complicated subject matter, boiling it down to some very key points, and explaining it in a way that really makes sense to dummies like me. You know, that's a talent. That's what good filmmakers should do. Not everybody does it. I think a lot of people get caught up in the tinkering with the aesthetics and trying to make it super artsy or super clever and gimmicky and everything. And Rich just tells a great story. And he explains what's going on in the way. So he did a documentary called Primed for Panic, Lockdown 2020. And he recorded this video. He's a legit filmmaker out with, you know, camera crews and all that stuff. But he did this one. This was during the lockdown, so he did this one just on Zoom, and I was in it. A bunch of people were in it, but we didn't do it in person because it would, you know, because he's in the UK. But even still, I mean, if he'd been filming it in real life, he would have come to the US to film it, and we couldn't do that, so we did it all over Zoom, and I watched how he specifically took it and used that. The detachment of us being on Zoom and incorporated that into the movie to really give it that feeling of what it was like during the pandemic, where you were isolated, where you couldn't, you know, where people couldn't leave their house. I just have a ton of respect for his filmmaking ability. And somebody that I met sort of late to the, you know, later in 2020 was Steve Poikkanen from Slow News Day. And I really like Steve. And I think if you watch our interview, you'll see that in my demeanor. And Steve, later after our interview, he wound up coming out to Denver. And he and I went out and had brunch somewhere. You know, he was out protesting, doing an Assange protest in Boulder. I met up with them. There was a group of them. We went out and we ate, and I chatted with all of them. And so, you know, I had a chance to spend some time with him as a real life human being. And look, Sunday afternoon, late December, Boulder, Colorado. 24 degrees, 10 o'clock in the morning on a street corner in a very small town in United States. Steve Poikkanen and about 10 other guys and girls of all ages, mostly older though, stood on an intersection with signs for freeing Julian Assange, an act that it was not designed for the person holding the key to Julian's prison cell to actually see and unlock the door and let him out. It was a symbolic gesture to remind people of what's happening to an Australian man in a UK prison cell. So I've got about as much respect for Steve Poikkanen as you can have for someone to stand out there on that corner, to fly in from Santa Cruz, to fly from the West Coast to the middle of the country, to go to a rally in Boulder, to stand on the street corner for a couple hours in literally freezing ass cold temperature with it snowing. I know, because I drove there. For a man he's never met to be let out of prison. What do you say? That's Steve. That's a good dude right there. So, you know, free Julian Assange. Follow Steve Poikkanen at Rockfin as well. Slow News Day is there. It's a great show. It's worth checking into. And well, you know, the tail end of 2020 caught fire with crypto, and I'm glad that I had Tim Pachote in my Rolodex to be able to talk to. Another one of those guys I met at an Acapulco. And, you know, he had a successful practice as a financial planner, but he had such contradictory beliefs to the established narrative that he found it impossible to work there anymore. And he wanted to be able to sell crypto. He wanted to be able to manage crypto for his clients. And he needed to go somewhere else. So he started his own situation, his own company, his Liberty Advisors, and he manages people's portfolio. He made, you know, he had to, you know, when you do that, when you go down one path and build a client list for years and years at a firm, and then you leave that firm, you know, he didn't get to take his people with him. So he did that knowing that he wasn't going to be able to take his people with him, but he felt so strongly about where things were headed with the government and how they were debasing the currency and the fiat dollar, you know, the dollar system and the role of physical, you know, precious metals in that, and how the, you know, the role of gold as the world's, you know, is backing the dollar, being taken off of that gold standard years ago, and how that affected the dollar, the role of cryptocurrency. I mean, Tim has a deep understanding about this. So it's nice to have that, you know, you know, somebody on that you can pick, you know, you can say, please come in and explain, you know, explain how we buy and sell crypto, how we hold it, how, you know, all of this. Give us talk to us like we're dummies. Explain this whole thing. So it's great to have these guests on, because I can only know what I know. You know, and I research things all the time. I talk to interesting people. I read books. I read, you know, white papers. I read a lot. I read as much as I can, but I don't know at all. And even the topics that I feel like I know really well, there's still more to know. There's still always more to know. But that's the role of the guests in this. And I want to know from you guys. So first of all, this audience has been growing like crazy, and I'm humbled and flattered and all of those things. But now I've got some, now we can have some fun. So I want to know from you guys, who do you want to see? Now, there's no guarantee. I mean, I might know him, I might not. I'm not afraid to ask. I've asked a lot of people to come on the show that never responded back, you know? So I'm not afraid to ask them, but I want to know what you guys are thinking. I mean, this is kind of how it's happened for guests in the past, where they said, wait, have you ever considered having this person on? And so, yeah, I want to know what you think, or what topics we haven't covered, you know, because the monologue episodes, we've talked about wars, the New World Order, psychosis of government, what power really is and how that works, and false flags, Building 7, Project for a New American Century, PNAC, you know, those shitheads. We've talked about private prison industry and the depopulation agenda and Federal Reserve and Corona situation, whatever you want to call that. We've talked about terrorism, you know, the actual ones that you may find in Washington, D.C. We've talked about the fake ones you may find in some Al-Qaeda video or something. I've taken my shots at NASA because I don't trust them. We've discussed Epstein. We've talked a little bit about religion. We've had Eric Gajewski on from Tradcat Night. He's been a guest, and he's a guy that, you know, knows he's off the charts when it comes to Catholicism. I know less than zero about Catholicism, you know? So where are we going to go? I've had a whole lot of fun doing this. You know how people complain and go, oh, I'm going to take heat from my listeners for this. They're going to call me a shithead. I have great listeners, and I'm not just saying that to butter you up. I swear to God, I'm not saying that. The emails I get are like real positive. Thanks for writing about this. Thanks for talking. Hey, that was crazy. I had no idea about that. I never get maybe I'm jinxing myself. I'm going to knock on wood, but I never get the emails that say you suck, you're dumb, you don't know anything. I just don't get those. I'm sure people are thinking it, believe me. I know they're thinking it. Maybe I'm encouraging people to do it now. But seriously though, what I get is I get really great feedback. And that I couldn't plan for. And I appreciate it. So thank you to everybody that is that's listening to the show. It's tempting to think that I'm talking to myself, you know, in a little room, that nobody's ever going to hear this. But I'm seeing reports. I'm getting feedback from people. I know that you're listening, and I really do appreciate it. And I would like to ask one additional thing of you, if it's not too much trouble, and that is to share the show. It is not required, of course. You're free to do whatever you want to do. But I would appreciate it if you let people know about it. Because I really like doing this, and I want to do this for a long, long time. And I have an easier time justifying investing the time and effort and money into this if I can make this a viable thing for me to do with my life. You know what I mean? The more people listen, the greater chance that this is a show that can stick around and I can do this for a long, long time. So it's a little selfish on my part to ask you to share the show, but I want to be transparent about my reasons. I want the show to grow. I want it to be a big, big show. And I want you to tell all your friends that you remember back when, you know, it was just, you know, a few people listening. That'll be a good story. So I'll wrap it up by saying I look forward to the next 100 shows. When I saw that I was coming up on this milestone, I wanted to do a specific episode dedicated to this and talking about some of the people that have been a part of the show for the first 100 episodes and remind you about them and kind of mention their names one more time and give you a little bit of backstory as to what we were talking about and who they were. So that if you are new to the show and you missed out on, say, the first 70 episodes, maybe go back, you know? If you heard me talk about somebody in there that you think might sound interesting, go look and see what you think. Go see if you can find their episode and see what we listened to. It's only, at most, it's a year old. You know, this podcast started in March of 2020. So you're not going to find like anything that's like 8 years old and really, you know, outdated information. So it'll all be relatively fresh. Go check it out. Again, thank you all. It means a lot to me. Your support is, I know it's tempting to go, it doesn't matter. It does matter. It matters. It matters that you like the show. It matters that you say nice things. My intention of doing this show to begin with has always been to start these conversations. Let's talk about some of the frustrations we're experiencing. Let's laugh about them too, if we can. Let's bring some people on that know more than us. Let's talk about some solutions and let's work towards getting those solutions, have them become a reality. Because I would really like on episode 252 to say, this is the episode where Macroaggressions becomes a podcast devoted 100% to dissecting football plays, defensive schemes, offensive schemes, shotgun formations, all this stuff. I would love that because that means that we fixed all these problems. And I hope that we get to that point. But the first step is to have the conversation. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of the conversation. And I'll see you soon.